All right. Woo. There it is. Let's take a deep breath. That's definitely for you guys and not for me. All right. All right. Well, good morning, everyone. I am glad to be with you. I'm also excited and nervous and everything in between. If you don't know me already, my name is Molly Rose Morgan, and I'm our Minister of Christian Life and Formation here at NHU. Usually you'll see me cracking a joke or two up here, and I hang out with the kids. That's more my zone. Today you have to listen to me talk for just a little bit longer than that, and my apologies for that. Last week Craig did amazing, and I was so jealous. He had a great spin move up here, so he would pick up the whole thing and kind of turn, and I was like practicing this week, and I was like, I don't think I can pull that off for my first time. But it was great, Craig, and I feel like everyone felt really engaged. So I'm going to try to spin around, but this is a little bit different for me. So the irony for me of being a minister is that I actually grew up quite shy. So if you would have told me that I grew up and was going to be facing this many people on a regular basis, I'd be like, absolutely not. Let's just never grow up because we can't do that. We're too scared, right? And we're doing this today. I do this regularly. I was a curious and creative and playful kid. I drew lots of pictures that my mother so graciously put up on the walls. My mom's actually here right now. Everybody say hi, Mom. I would hum and make up my own soundtracks. I loved Legos. I would build worlds with my brother making Lego stuff. We'd go in the alley behind our house and we'd build skateboard ramps and we'd play basketball, pretend we were NBA players. That was something we loved to do. Here is a photo of that from that time of my life. So yes, that is a head warmer, and it did. We really needed it for the 70-degree days in Los Angeles. It was very harsh weather, which would mean that it was actually for fashion. That was for fashion, so. And that's an Old Navy t-shirt. I still love that shirt. I wish I still had it. Pretty decent, right? But the other thing I want to talk about is I want you guys to picture yourself as a kid. Take a minute to picture yourself as a kid. And lucky for you, you already see what I look like. Hopefully, you're a little bit less awkward than that. But just take a minute. Maybe you close your eyes and that helps you imagine more. What were you like? Were you a goody two-shoes? Were you a straight-A student? Were you quirky? Were you creative? Were you the type that typically got in trouble? Who were you and what were you like as a kid? All right. So now we're going to go on a journey together. We're going to read this passage together. All right. Now he was teaching in one of the synagogues on the Sabbath, and just then there appeared a woman with a spirit that had disabled her for 18 years. She was bent over and was quite unable to stand up straight. When Jesus saw her, he called her over and said, "Woman, you are set free from your ailment." When he laid his hands on her, immediately she stood up straight and began praising God. But the leader of the synagogue, indignant because Jesus had cured on the Sabbath, kept saying to the crowd, "There are 6 days on which work ought to be done. Come on those days and be cured, and not on the Sabbath day." But the Lord answered him and said, "You hypocrites! Does not each of you on the Sabbath untie his ox or his donkey from the manger and lead it away to give it water? And ought not this woman, a daughter of Abraham, whom Satan bound for 18 long years, be set free from this bondage on the Sabbath day?" When he said this, all his opponents were put to shame, and the entire crowd was rejoicing in all the wonderful things that he was doing. So before we really dive into this, I want to be clear, we're not reading this story today through an ableist lens, which means this isn't a story about how disabled bodies are broken or sinful or in need of fixing, and I just want to clarify that early on, because we reject that type of theology. Instead, we're going to focus on this woman's story, on what restoration looked like for her. Because disability is not a punishment, and it's not a problem that needs to be solved. And I want to clarify that with you guys. So let's go back to that image of you as a kid. What were you like? Were you quirky? Were you imaginative? Were you silly? Were you goofy? And then let's transfer that to having a moment of imagining this woman in the passage. What was she like as a child? Did she frolic, and did her hair flip as she frolicked? Did she take a stick and draw stick figures in the dust? Did her mother display her mediocre art on her walls? What was she like? Was she creative? Was she imaginative? Did she have this rich inner world? Did she have this sense of hope and optimism and curiosity about what the future could hold for her? I think one of the beauties of the Bible is that it often leaves out details. And so we get to imagine things for ourselves. How many people in this room love to read? Raise your hand if you're a reader. I'm not hating if you're not. That's totally fine. I have this urge to be like, let's start a big book club, but we're going to stay focused. But I love reading. And maybe you love this too, but what I love about reading is we get to imagine these characters in the book. We get to imagine the settings of the story and picture what they look like. And we all have different pictures, but it still means something for us, right? And so what's neat about the Bible is it leaves space for us to be able to do that too. So we don't technically know if this spirit that disabled her existed her entire life or if she developed it over time. It doesn't really say, right? We're not sure what happened. But the point is, she can no longer stand up straight, right? That's the point of what's going on here. And we don't even need to use that much of our imagination to know how much pain and isolation this likely caused her in her life. It probably caused a lot of struggle for her. Because at this time, most religious officials who held the power and held the influence associated things like this, like being marginalized or being conventionally different or having a financial struggle with God's judgment. That if something like that is happening in your life, you must have some unrepentant sin that caused that, right? And I wish that things were different today, but they're not, right? Because there's still a lot of really powerful and influential religious people today who hold on to harmful theologies and belief systems like that. That say, hey, you have something that you're struggling with in your life? Oh, that must mean that you have sinned, that God is judging you. He's placing his judgment on you, right? So not only is she disabled by the spirit, but she's also probably weighed down by these harmful belief systems and theologies that people are carrying. And along with that, stares and whispers and social isolation that she likely experienced at the hands of these people. People speculating, I wonder what she did to deserve this type of life, right? So whether from this spirit or the sheer weight of misunderstanding, of hatred, of judgment, she is weighed down and she can no longer stand up straight. She is stuck bent over. And in my own way, I can think of ways that I spent years contorting myself to try to fit the expectations of religious people in countless evangelical church settings. I have. And maybe you guys can relate to that. I know I've spoken to a few people in this room that they're like, yeah, that's my story too, right? Because at the age of 22, I had this noble dream where I was like, you know what? I really want to work in the church. Like, that is my dream. That seems so cool. And it's funny because I had spent all 4 years of college mocking the Bible majors because I was like, these guys are never going to make any money. Tough, right? Yeah, and the joke's on me because look where I am, right? But in my early 20s, I had dedicated myself to this grind of church work, of proving that I was worthy to lead in this capacity. So I started as most people do. I was an unpaid intern, right? And we love being an unpaid intern. It basically means you're doing more work than the paid people. Sometimes, and it means that they're paying you an experience, which, oh my gosh, I love going to the grocery store with a wallet filled with experience. You can get so many things, it takes you so far, right? And I worked multiple jobs to make ends meet. I worked at a coffee shop from 4 a.m. to 10 a.m., and then I would go work at church from 11 to 6. I did all those types of things. I laughed at quite a few pastors' unfunny jokes, and they just weren't very funny. You guys, they were usually offensive, but you're like, I'm not going to go against the big guy here. Like, that's funny. That's hilarious. I would come in early. I would stay late. I would be asked to take notes in staff meetings and to keep my comments to myself. Lucky for them, I'm an incredible note taker. I was relegated to the assistant role oftentimes. I ran slides for the worship team at 6 a.m. for their worship team rehearsal before I started working for church that day. I even went on tour with the worship team. Yes, that is possible, and you can do that. Not only that, but I would clean bathrooms. I drove up to camp once at midnight after getting into a small car accident. I said, hey, I can turn around and go back and take care of myself or straight to camp. And I went to camp because that's the type of person that I was. I taught when I got the opportunity, which as a woman was pretty rare in evangelical settings, because if I asked, it was like, wow, how overambitious and prideful of you to assume that you should be teaching in this space. And during this time, I dated men. And those who had ignored me began to take this immense interest in my life. I got invited to more things. They paid attention. They wanted to know what was up with me. I was like, wow, this is so interesting. all because I'm dating this man right now. I smiled through sermons that excluded people, and amongst all of these things, I found myself bent over backwards, and I could no longer stand up straight under the weight of these things, right? And maybe this is sounding familiar to some of you. Maybe you guys have a similar story. Maybe you can relate to it. And there's a few interesting things that stick out to me about this passage. One major one being that usually someone wants Jesus' attention, they do something kind of wild to get it. They might climb a tree, or they shove through the crowd, just to touch Jesus' clothes. And this is kind of trippy, because it just says that she shows up, and we don't know why. The Bible doesn't tell us why. It just says she appeared, which is pretty trippy, almost out of nowhere. Had she been there to worship? Was she just curious about who this Jesus guy was? Like, we don't really know why she was there. But we do know that Jesus sees her, right? He sees her. He notices her. And it's likely along with the slander and the meanness that people had hurled at her over the course of her life, she was probably ignored pretty often. Because sometimes people think they're being kind, and they just ignore people. They think this is kindness, politeness, it's the same thing, it's not. I'm just going to ignore this person and continue on with my day. So she's probably got a lot of experience with being ignored, right? And after years of being treated like this, Jesus sees her. And I want to give that moment a sufficient amount of pause because I feel like it's so powerful. Because I'm sure we can all think of a time in our lives where we felt unseen and alone and unknown. Like, does anyone see me right now? Like, I'm going through the motions, I'm going to work, I'm going to school, I'm showing up, but does anyone see me and what I'm experiencing, what I'm going through? And so I think that's such a powerful gift that God gives us as people, that we get to see one another in our lives and the things that we go through. So I feel like that moment alone was healing for her, because when we see each other, like really take the time to see, it's healing. So she was seen by someone, but not just by anyone, but by a man, during a time where it wasn't that chill to talk to women if they weren't in your family or you weren't married to them. A lot of times, if we recognize in the Bible, the disciples are like, Jesus, what are you doing? They're shocked and indignant because he's going and talking to a woman who's not in his family and he's not related to, and he always goes past that, right? But he wasn't just a man. He was powerful and he was influential. And he sees her, and he calls her forward, and he touches her, and she begins to stand tall. Back to my own story, I spent years of shrinking and silencing myself, and spoiler alert, we probably all know what happened. I got burnt out. I was over it. I was like, I don't want to do this anymore, and I was tired of making myself into someone that I wasn't. I was tired of trying to fit into places and spaces that didn't make room for me and that didn't want to make room for me, and bumping my head on these glass ceilings. I was over it. And I decided to burn the ships, so to speak. So I left the evangelical church 3 years ago in 2022, and I didn't look back. I was done. I didn't want to know where Jesus was. I didn't care. I didn't want to be anywhere near a church. I can assure you of that. And I didn't know what would become of this dashed dream and career that I had held throughout my 20s. I was just like, I'm gone. I'm done with it. And I didn't want to be seen. I didn't want someone to see me in what I was going through. Because for so long, I had been told that this desire that I had to preach, my queerness, my voice, it was all this problem. It was a symptom. It was a sin. And something that needed to be healed or made right in me. And the only way to do that was by being made straight. Spoiler alert, praying the gay away does not work. I stand here before you. If you're like, I might try that later, don't try it, doesn't work, right? Or I tried to be a more feminine and gentle and submissive type of woman, right? The type who's usually seen and not heard. That's the type that a lot of people are looking for. But the irony isn't lost on me that for such a long time, I thought if I could just stand up, quote unquote, straight, if I could just be more gentle or submissive like these other women, I could be who Jesus wanted me to be. But in this story, Jesus doesn't make this woman into someone else. He doesn't say, and once you've done these things, come back and I will help you. He restores her. And I'd like to believe that he restores her into someone that she already authentically was, before she had started to carry the weight of these expectations and these roles and these layers that were bestowed upon her, not by him, but by other people. Right? He doesn't say, be someone new. He brings her back to herself, and he brings her to a place of freedom. And I do wonder if when she finally stood up, she remembered what it was like to run outside as a child, to draw in the dirt, to have a sense of optimism and curiosity and hope about what could be, what good was still to come in her life. I wonder about that. But we can't have a story about Jesus doing something powerful for someone unless the peanut gallery speaks up, right? I always think of them as the peanut gallery. I'm like, there they are. I don't know where they came from, but they're there, right? And yet again, they've missed the point because Jesus was operating outside of their rules and regulations. It was not, let us celebrate because this woman has been restored. It was, you can restore her, but not like that. Not on Thursdays, not at 10, you know, you can't do it like that. And what's crazy is this type of rhetoric has existed throughout history. None of this is new, right? It still exists today, but it shows that it existed as far back as then. And I never expected to be where I am right now. Back in church, working as a minister, especially as my whole self. To be here and to be accepted has been one of the most beautiful and unexpected moments I've gotten to experience in my life. And I say that with genuine honesty because I really tried to push church work as far down on my resume as I could. I was like, whatever, I'll do that, it doesn't matter, as long as I'm not back in a church. And yet, here I am. And there's something so beautiful and mysterious about that. That's what I love about God, is that he does beautiful and mysterious things like that for us. But you can bet that there's people that have things to say about what I'm doing now, right? Sure, you can help her, but just not at this time, not at that place. Sure, that's great you're back in church, but not in that role, not like that. After coming out, I was so confident that my career was over and my time in the church was over. I was done. I was aware of the stakes when I stepped away. I knew it. I knew what I was walking away from. But something unusual happened in that I didn't call for attention, but Jesus noticed me, right? And he restored me back to myself, something that I'm gifted in and something that he wanted me to do. And I know this story isn't unique because I know there's people in this room that I've spoken with and that we've shared hard things with each other who've experienced what I have or worse. It's not unique, but it is my story, and I'm grateful for what God has done, but I'm also very surprised by it. And I love that we can still be surprised by God, even when we're in a church like this where a lot of us have been burnt and hurt and seen things and heard things that we're like, I just don't want any part of that anymore, and God can still surprise you. And in so many ways, growing older means learning to ask yourself hard questions. I don't love it. But some of these questions, like what are the harmful beliefs and things others have said that caused me to bend? What has me weighed down that didn't come from God? And what would it mean for me to step into my authenticity? Because Jesus sees us like he saw her, like he saw me. And you don't have to climb a tree, and you don't have to shove your way through the crowd, and you don't have to perform, because Jesus isn't asking you to become someone new. Amen.
Thank you, Molly Rose. That was beautiful.